This is Great FM, a podcast series by Great HR, produced by Timber Media.
Hello, and how are we doing today? Welcome to another episode of Great FM, everybody. Ahalya here, keeping you company. And you know, we're already at that point in the series where we're about to have a what's the update type conversation on something we've spoken about, because that's just how quickly the HR landscape seems to be evolving. And today's topic of conversation is going to be that of reskilling. You know, when the COVID-19 pandemic struck and people's professional futures and opportunities suddenly became so dynamic, HR professionals were left to contend with a couple of questions, right? How do we reskill our employees? Do we have a reskilling ecosystem in place? How are we going to set the wheels in motion? A lot of different things to consider at that time. So conversations about reskilling began, and it was talked about on podcasts, you know, just like it was talked about on ours. And people kind of panicked, and I think something came out of it, right? But was that something, the thing that we needed? And did some people get it right more than others? Did reskilling have its one-hit wonder moment and get its time in the spotlight and then completely vanish? Let's look at some statistics here and get ready. It's going to be a meta moment because I'm referring to a great HR report titled Employer Expectations in the AI Era, which cites that, and I quote, "When asked what matters most, employers highlighted technical proficiency, with role-based technical skills leading at 40% of demand. This underscores the importance of specialized knowledge in various professional domains." Now, we're going to keep exploring other findings from this report as we go ahead, but it's enough to tell you that skilling is still a major priority for employers, and therefore for employees too, and therefore for HR professionals to pay attention to. So helping us unpack this exciting conversation of reskilling in 2024, the then versus the now, is Shatadru Chakraborty, Director HR Corporate Services APAC CGI. Welcome, Shatadru. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello, everyone. Thank you. Thanks, Ahalya, for setting the context.
So you are a very perfect person for us to be talking to. So I think, why don't we start looking, you know, at where we really are, Shatadru? What were the immediate priorities in reskilling and skilling for HR professionals at that time versus now?
Yeah. So Ahalya, if you go back to the times we're talking about, and honestly, reskilling as a topic has been on the agenda for for probably at least half a decade or decade per se. Now, the entire concept of reskilling was looked at as at a pace and at a organizational level, at a learning team level, at a training and development, used to be more specifically speaking about reskilling. What I saw was most of the organization was transiting into a gradual path of reskilling of people, knowing the fact, mm-hmm. you know, that it will be a journey around cloud, it will be a journey around data, it will be reskilling around new opportunities in the field of, you know, maybe some other corporate initiatives. Now, if you look at that piece going in a slopey movement, cut to post-COVID, that growth has exponentially increased, and thanks to COVID, it has been acted as a catalyst. Mm-hmm. Now, what has happened post that is also our global uncertainties and the recent situation of global politics, if you follow. I want to give a small analogy to explain what I'm trying to say. If you look back 2019, OECD report, they fundamentally called out that next 15 to 20 years, most likely the technologies, 14% of those world jobs and radically transformed. Another, mm-hmm. and that will affect around 1 billion people. If you see that report, is still available online. It was by Harvard Business Review. But they didn't even factor that point in time, the ChatGPT wave and the Gen AI wave that has hit us. Right. Though the prediction was pretty fine, the COVID and the entire thing shifted towards, because AI grew faster than we anticipated. Now, if you look at that changing trend and where we started off, what we're doing today, the demand of skills at an accelerated pace has happened. So hence, to handle a growing number of repetitive and manual tasks, maybe to perform increasingly sophisticated skills and knowledge, research, coding, everything on a verge of disruption. So today, the half life of the skill is now less than 5 years.
Okay.
Now, coming to where we are today, so if you really look at the market, industry-wise, it is different for different. I come from an organization, I was working with some organization which is into product technology, running systems end-to-end, and they're part of the larger global innovation centers today. That is different vis-a-vis a service organization or a service-centric organization, large IT consulting mm-hmm. companies. The approach is pretty different. Now, learning team becomes a fundamental fulcrum for driving this entire reskilling journey. That is a major change that has happened. So it is a business strategy, it is a global imperative, and the learning team becomes the center of this entire transition to reskilling.
Satadru, one interesting insight that just came through, there are a couple of things that changed drastically, right? From the point in time that we're referencing, which is peak COVID, right? And now moving into post, what do you think? So just keeping those things aside, the variables that came in, keeping those things aside, what do you think we got right from the COVID reskilling movement? Do you think we kind of cracked the code to successful reskilling programs more than we ever did in the past?
Yeah, I think yes and a no for that, honestly. And why I say yes and a no, because being in the function which is seeing this transition at a 30,000 feet bird's eye view from as well, from the industry, I think what we have done very nicely as an industry is we have identified and we have accepted the fact that reskilling is needed. Okay. We have identified positions that are needed to be reskilled. Okay. We have kind of touched upon, just scratched upon the iceberg on the future needs of what skill we are driving to. I think what we have not done is we have not updated our backend model to match up with that changing landscape. What I mean is that your frameworks are there, the learning academies are there, your schoolings are there behind every organization, call it large and small of it. But what they're doing is they're still scratching the tip of the iceberg of the entire reskilling initiative. We are still somewhere where we are kind of following the requirements being asked from us and not leading the change. So when it comes down from the leadership down, saying that this organization needs to go through five skills in next 10 years, then your entire organization is rallying for it. Okay. Somewhere that is missing, I think.
Okay, so that's a very unique insight, and one that I'm going to pick up on right now. So, another interesting finding from the report, the Great HR report that we cited in the beginning was that, and I quote, in-house training programs, right, 14% and company-funded courses, 7% are less favored, indicating that employers may be looking for candidates who are proactive and demonstrate self-reliance and initiative in skill acquisition. I'm kind of intrigued by this difference, right, in relationship to research skilling between employees and employers, and how that changes things for an HR professional who's trying to facilitate a robust reskilling ecosystem, right? Because an employee values skilling programs because that makes them, like hot property, right? For the lack of a better phrase. And employers value people who have skills but aren't too keen on being the skillers. It's kind of like a catch-22. So how can HR professionals navigate this so that everybody wins? And, how have we found ourselves in this conundrum?
Yeah, very rightly put there. So yeah, that is the challenge that we HR face regularly. And again, I come back to that, my favorite point on this entire reskilling journey. It is a reskilling is a strategic imperative. We need to understand that as an organization. And I'm quoting that again and again because I'll tell you the reason. When you identify it as a strategic imperative from a top-down approach, your entire organization gets communicated in a way. Today, these things, then this communication and this strategic direction are happening in small pockets. Your market need is much faster. That's what my point was. That is one. Now, when it comes to strategic initiative, hence your communication will be deep, hence your follow-through, your KRAs, your entire backend model will work as per that strategic need. Another very important fact is it is also a responsibility of every leader and manager to enable their teams to understand the need for reskilling. Okay. I think that's where the gap, and that's where your question is also. Organizations somewhere miss this bus, and I've seen the conversations. Today, given me a fact, until unless there's a need for me to learn, not all the time I'll be in learning mode. All right. And that's picking up with the generations changing. Second thing that is very, very interesting, our structures in the organizations, most of the organizations are built in a way where learning is looked as more of a churn learning. That is, your requirement is there, you're churning the learn, you're pushing five people to learn in a particular program, and you're driving that learning program. It is not that you're connected that learning with actual end development of that individual. If you show that journey, if you show that journey seamlessly, maybe to a small population of the organization, not everyone, that will be also a success. What I mean by that, if you tell a development engineer, here is the clear path of your to become a subject matter expert, or maybe a solution architect, he or she needs to see that entire journey through. You are showing the end result, hence you are driving somewhere. The pull is automatically there. Today, I think the most of these is happening because we have a need of 30 members, 40 members, 100 members in a team. We are pushing a load of people to go and do fundamentals of AI. Now, what do I do learning the fundamentals of AI? You're getting the point. So is there an imperative? Do I see the end result after doing what? That's where the gap is. So I think communication is important. what's in it for me story, then result vision is important. And that's where most of the organizations structurally fails or are in that conundrum right now, which we need to probably address very deeply.
Understood. Shatadru, I'd also like to just intervene in this conversation at this point and ask your opinion. Do you believe that right now we find ourselves in a position with reskilling where we're still being a bit more reactive than proactive, and we're not really, following through on the vision entirely from the start? Because there needs to be that kind of closing the loop, right, of facilitating learning. And do you think that's where, we're pretty much lacking?
Oh, yes, I fundamentally believe that we have a long way to go, but are we not on that journey? Yes, we are. Most of the organizations have known this fact, but somewhere I think there's only 5-10%, and the team is learning and the leadership is learning by the minute, stating how important the entire learning journey and the organization needs to be, how strong it needs to be, how closely it needs to be working with the global COEs and the CEO office per se. If you look at the pyramid of organization, right? The bottom of the pyramid is where we are hiring mostly. Most of the organizations are hiring there. Your approach of the churn, your approach of skilling over there is more of learning and making people be available for their first line job from the college out, and they get a kind of education and meant more of on the job learning and all that. Well, that is also getting redefined because as we speak, there are a lot of AI related things coming in over there, and the learning landscape is changing drastically. Cut to that, come to the middle section of the pyramid, which is more of your solid potential, who are actually techno. I'm talking of the experience bracket of a 5 years to a probably 15 years bracket. Okay, that's where all the action is happening in an organization, right? When you look at that piece of it, you will find, if I'm not very wrong, just to quote, I'm not quoting from any particular place, but with my experience, would be roughly around 60% millennials, 40%, 70% millennials. 30% would be Gen Zs who have probably moved a little faster in their career and moved at just starting off the middle section of there. You are addressing a generation where needs are very different. Your learning needs cannot be same for everyone in that section. When you're targeting the millennials, you're probably dealing with a lot of skills, like specifically when we look at the skills of Industrial Revolution 4 kind of skills. You're pushing people to get into analytical thinking and innovation mindset. Trying to say your learning organization should touch in a way in every segment and strata of the organization so that it is little more proactive, identifying talents from the beginning and then giving specific learning, customized learning to them.
Okay, so I think this is a good point in the conversation to also take a look at maybe, a case study where you believe that a company got skilling and reskilling right. Does a case like that come to mind?
There are a lot of companies who got skilling and reskilling. Reskilling, I think we are loosely using the term. Let's put a skilling per se. And I think a lot of organizations, I don't want to take name of the FMCG organizations or the front leading FMCG companies have done this fundamentally right from very early days. And why they have done that is they are probably, I'm not talking about the Gen AI effect on them or ChatGPT effect on them right now. I'm generally speaking how they look at the structure. I've seen the FMCG organization doing it pretty well. A few of the frontline product organization, global product organizations have done pretty well that where they have looked into end-to-end learning of individuals at different levels. I think product organizations and FMCGs are doing it fundamentally right. We have still a long way to go when it comes to manufacturing, when it comes to pharma. And I think they are a little behind as an industry per se. Another industry which is again ahead of this is fintech. Fintech, you see a lot of front-ending actions happening. But even there, the learning organization predominantly is a reactive organization still. But are we in the game? Yes, we are all in that fast-moving, changing platform right now. We are ready to take that plunge, I think.
No, but it is important to take the plunge as well, right?
Yeah,
And I guess
very.
I did have a question noted down for you, which is really about statistics and data sets, but I think I'll change it a little bit to ask you whether there are any pitfalls to not paying attention to skilling within the workplace, right? For the growth of an organization, for the success of it, I think it's kind of at this point no-brainer that it is important, right? Pay attention to it. But there might be some non-believers out there that we still need to convince, Shatatru. So.
See, honestly, it's an elephant in the room. We might want to say it, I want to take it slow, that we will see the change through. That is also one school of thought. Many believe fundamentally that we don't yet know the outcomes and effect of this entire Gen AI wave, and we don't know where we are landing. So, but I think it is like now or never, because if you're not early to this transition, you are fundamentally failing to address a large part of the organization which is organization now and future. And future, when I say don't think far future, it is just next 5 years, not even five, 2 to 3 years. The wave is here. You are addressing a population of people in the company which are natives to technology. Okay, your structures are built to address certain immigrants of technology all this while. But what you're targeting, your set of strategies should be proactively designed now for natives of technology. The most of the people like working with tech savvy organizations. What I mean is tech savviness, nothing to do with systems, processes, platforms. Tech savviness is how tech driven the organization is, front ending, and they're the best apps in the market. Why do you think I use a swanky app on the phone and not an office app which is on training? Because the app developed within the organization might not have a very good and interesting UI UX. But the one which you're getting in open source appeals to your mind. So that's kind of population you're addressing. So when you're addressing that, you cannot go with the run of the mill learning schools stating that, hey, you come to the class, you do this Java training. No, Java is written differently on AI. Even that is fundamentally changing. The way you code on AI platforms is different from what you used to do. So when the fundamental is changing, I think you will be naive to disagree to that and not change. And that's the biggest pitfall. The biggest pitfall, if you ask in one word, would be a denial that this change is there. I think that would be the biggest pitfall.
That's a very strong way to convince people to pay attention to it. And my final question, we love guides on great HR, as you're going to see towards the final end of the episode. But for now, Shatadri, what do you think the ultimate reskilling or skilling guide looks like, right? A few criteria that you believe are extremely important that can be immediate actionable tips for HR professionals listening in today.
I think let's cut to the chase of this technology fast forwardness. From an HR standpoint, again, strategic business imperative is number one. So when your business is driving learning as a central fulcrum and reskilling is your central thought process, I think as an HR professional, our lot of focus should go into 2025, I think, industry 4.0 skills, what they're targeted as. They're typically about how to use technology, how to monitor, how to control them. These are the skills that needs to be focused on. I think, as I told, it is fundamental responsibility of manager and leader, and it is not HR alone that can drive this. It can be an only enabler per se. Drive this entire thing as a change management initiative. That is very important. I think you, as an HR, you have to be in front leading, fundamentally believing this is needed, and you are doing the change. Understand the supply and demand of the skill. Don't just go run of the mill and say the rate card, I'll not touch base of the skill, I'll go with the client's ask. No, client will also go through a change. They are not probably realizing it. If you are in a very, very technology leadership role and you are driving as a consultant, your fundamental role is to show the client or show that end client, my customer, to understand the demand of supply and understand that exact gap in skill. That is very important as an HR. How are you recruiting? How are you evaluating? Are we going with the traditional way of doing that? Or are we using something very, very fundamental? Think of something which is innovative, which is to the person. Again, coming to HR's primary role as driving a culture, as I said earlier also, shaping the mindset of middle managers. It's very important to drive as a culture of those middle managers who are probably millennials and also grappling with the fact how to enhance these people. As a HR, if you are driving some of the skills, I think this is also important to find employees who wants to reskill and when they want to reskill, to drive that thought process. I mean, this is also driving some empowerment to the employees, stating that, hey, do you want to go through this reskilling? Because it is tough for me after 20 years. If you want me to leave HR and drive something completely different, it is tough. Reskilling needs a lot of mental resilience and agility to go through. So are you ready to give that psychological safety to that employee so that he or she is up for a failure even if the reskilling is happening? I think these are very softer things that will build the platform for reskilling. Today, the employee, first of all, will 10 times think before doing that because he know he's up for a failure because does not know the end result. He'll be successful or not. So these are the things that HR facilitates: middle-level manager mindset, reskilling, psychological safety about it, need and time of who wants the reskilling and what is the time to reskill. All these things drive the integral part of the entire reskilling journey, I think.
That's fantastic, Shitadru. You know, especially the last part about psychological safety. I think that's not something that people think about as a valuable metric, right? When talking about the skilling conversation. So thank you so much for bringing that up.
You're
And
welcome.
as we reach the end of today's conversation on the reading list, I hear that you do have some good recommendations for our audience. So please take it away. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, where we can get our knowledge when it comes to understanding learning and skilling in the workplace.
The Great FM Reading List. Not just good, get great with these books.
Yeah, so I'm of the generation where I'm a millennial, but I fundamentally believe when there is a podcast available, an audiobook why to read, and sue me if I say that, but I think there are certain books which has really made helped me. Again, that these books are also very new. So honestly, I believe in the white papers and the new researches that are coming in the market to be much more abreast with the technology changes. But I suggest there's a James McKenna book on upskilling, reskill, and thrive. I guess if I'm getting the name correctly, it's called Upskill, Reskill, Thrive. There's a beautiful book by James McKenna which helped me drive the points in my mind. But I think to the audience, I would suggest please keep on searching on white papers that are coming in these areas. And there's a lot of research happening on future of workforce. And I think podcasts and all this kind of series has helped to be abreast of the market changes more if you really learn. And today's generation is very much tech savvy, so I don't think that should be a problem.
Okay, all right. Point noted. And maybe, you know, if you're not too much of a reader, you can get started by just listening to this podcast episode from start to finish. Thank you so much, Satadru, for being with us on Great FM and for helping us unpack the conversation of skilling in the workplace. You know, the journey really that we've had over the past couple of years. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Same here, Ahilya. Thanks for hosting me today, and it was lovely bringing out the points. Hope your audience liked the conversation.
This is Great FM, a podcast series by Great HR, produced by Timber Media.